Coming up on the Rami LaVie podcast, tonight is the biggest Knicks game in over a decade, I'd say. We talked about it. We talked about what went wrong in game three and how they can fix this going into game four and see if they can even up the series. But enjoy it. It'll be a fun game one way or another. Hopefully it'll be fun and hopefully the Knicks will win. Elsewhere, we talked about Sixers and the Celtics yesterday. James Harden goes off again and it leads to the second Sixers victory of the series. The series is now tied 2-2. Speaking of, the Lakers are trying to take a 3-1 commanding lead while the Warriors are trying to tie that series at 2. And another series that's tied at 2 in the Western Conference is Phoenix and Denver, also tied 2-2. And having two superstars on your team is pretty great. Just ask new Suns owner Matt Ishbia. Oh yeah, we talked about him a little bit too as he got into a little bit of a skerfuffle with Nikola Jokic. All that and a whole lot more coming up. We also threw in a little football talk at the end. So a lot to cover. All of it coming right now on the Rami LaVie podcast. One of the things I talk about on this podcast a lot is the stigma against mental health. I think, unfortunately, there has been a stigma, but we're slowly breaking it. And if you think you might be feeling depressed, stressed, anxious, overwhelmed, or maybe you just want to talk to someone, today's sponsor, BetterHelp, is here to help you. BetterHelp offers licensed therapists who are trained to listen and help. Talk to your therapist in a private online environment at your convenience. There's a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's 20,000 plus therapist network that may not be available in your area. You just fill out a questionnaire to help access your specific needs, and then you get matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. Plus, you can exchange unlimited text messages, and everything you share is completely confidential. So I talk about on this podcast how your mindset towards things changes everything. One of the things that I learned in therapy was that join the 2 million plus people who have taken charge of their mental health with an experienced BetterHelp therapist. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/Rami. That's my first name. That's BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/Rami, my first name, Rami. If you use that link, the link is in the description in the podcast notes. If you use that link, you'll get 10% off and it'll also help me out. So please do that. I'm telling you, it's worth it. Do it today. Welcome back to the Rami LaVie podcast, episode 148. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for sharing it, as always. And no, there's no fancy open today. I guess we only do that after wins, or really just kind of when I feel like it. It's not based necessarily on wins or losses or anything, but definitely after the way the Knicks played on Saturday, no need for that today. But it's not a negative podcast. This isn't a negative thing. It's Monday right now. It is Monday, May 8th. And guess what? That means tonight is game four, a huge game, the biggest Knicks game probably since 2013, as they try not to go into a 3-1 hole in the series against the Miami Heat. They try and even up the series before coming home on Wednesday to play against the Miami Heat. So a huge game for the Knicks tonight in Miami. But let's talk about game three. What happened in game three? What can change from here to the rest of the series? How the Knicks can recapture this series? And let's start from the top. And the number one thing, because I kind of mentioned this on a podcast, I think it was two episodes ago, I talked about Jimmy Butler. And I started saying, I never really finished my thought. And sometimes I do that on the podcast. And maybe people should call me out for it more. But I'll start saying something and everything reminds me of something. So my mind will start going to another thing and I'll have sometimes a hard time getting back to my previous thought. Anyway, not the point. The point is that I started talking about Jimmy Butler and how a friend of mine, and this is the end of that thought. So if you were waiting with bated breath, oh, I wonder what the full Jimmy Butler conversation was. Well, here it is. A friend of mine and I were talking about Jimmy Butler and we were talking about how would you want him as on the Knicks? We were talking earlier in the season, and I said this earlier in the season. I said, where do you go from here? I had that conversation on the podcast. Then as the season went on, and it clearly became a special, more fun team, I was like, okay, we'll put this conversation on hold for now. We'll enjoy this team, and then in the offseason, we'll have those conversations again. But one of the conversations I had with my friend at the time was, is Jimmy Butler a guy that you would want on your team? And the conversation went a little something like this. Like, during the regular season, you look at Jimmy Butler's stats, you look at what he's done in his career, it's not all that impressive. He's a solid player, a very good player, I would say. And let's see if I could actually pull up Jimmy Butler career stats real quick and give them to you. All right, here it is. Okay. First of all, the first thing that jumps out right away, he's going to miss time, right? Going back, he hasn't played. This was the first year he's actually played over 60 games since 2017, which is his last year in Chicago. So you go back, you look at, all right, or actually that's not true because he played 65. It was just between two teams in 2018 and 2019. So he played 65 games in 2018, 2019 with Minnesota and Philly. He played 59 in Minnesota the year before that. And then in Miami, his years in Miami, played 58, 52, 57, and 64. One of those was a 72-game season. I think that was the year he played 52. So the number one thing that stands out, he's going to miss time every year. He's been between about 18 points per game and 23 points per game in each one of those seasons, between 5 and 6.5 rebounds. And on his best year, he averaged 7 assists, but mostly he's around 4 to 6 assists per game. Solid player. Shooting numbers, he's a solid, decent shooter. His splits for his career are about 47, 32, and 85, and he had some really bad three-point shooting years in there. This year, he was 35% from three, but last year, 23%. The year before, 24%. The year before that, 24%. The year before that, 33% and 37%. That's going back a bunch of years already. Free throws, he's improved on. Three-point shooting, he's struggled with. But that's the point. The point is, he's decent shooter, not a great three-point shooter, and obviously a solid free throw shooter, and he gets to the line, he gets inside, and this year he focused a lot more on shooting a lot more twos per game than he did threes. He only shot 1.5 threes per game this year, which is less. It's down from any point previously in his career, and he's shooting 14 two-pointers per game, and he's actually shooting way better on his two-pointers, 53% this season than previous years. So what was the conversation? The conversation essentially went like that. We know he's a good defender. We know he's going to miss about 15 to 20 games per year. Does the Tibbs thing work with him? Obviously, he still has great things to say about Tibbs. He's played with Tibbs in the past. But that's just it. He's about a 20-point-per-game guy. He's 25-5 with decent shooting numbers, not great shooting numbers, not a great three-point shooter. How does that work with Jalen Brunson? How does that work with this team? What does a trade like that look like? And this is at this point in the season, we're talking about this. Miami's caving, right? They just keep losing. He's not playing. They have so many injuries. And, you know, the conversation would have even continued if, I don't know, they almost lost the play-in game, right? They had to play a second play-in game, but they almost lost that also. Anyway, so my point was, does he make this team a championship contender? He's obviously a great player, and he makes the team better, but I wasn't certain he made the team a championship contender. And then you remember, though, what he does in the playoffs. And this is where the entire conversation has to change. Because you look at his playoff numbers, and it's entirely different. And specifically, look at his Miami playoff totals. So over the course of four playoff runs with Miami, here's what he's done. He's 25 points per game, 6 assists per game, 7 rebounds per game, 49% from 2-point, or 49% total, 35% from 3, 84% from free throw. So the free throws is the same. His 3-point percent shooting goes up significantly. His shooting overall goes up significantly. And then his attempts from the free throw. He goes from 6.5 free throw attempts per game to 8.5 free throw attempts per game. He goes from 15 shots per game to 17.5 shots per game. There's a different level of him, and you just see it. It's not even a numbers thing. You see the physicality. You see how he takes over. He takes command, the defensive side. He wants to take every big shot. He wants to take every last second shot. And there was an interview he did this week that was incredible, or I don't know if it was this week. I saw it this week, where with all that playoff success and playoff Jimmy, and they talk about all these things, somebody asked him, somebody said, what is it about you that goes to another level in the playoffs? He's like, I just want to win. And he said that, look, I don't consider myself a winner, which is crazy because so many people would say Jimmy Butler, of course he's a winner, because when it matters most, we just talked about this, he's a solid NBA player in the regular season. And then all of a sudden in the playoffs, he takes it to a whole new level, a level that he's not reaching in the regular season ever in his career. So what happens to him in the playoffs? Of course he's a winner. And he said, no, I haven't won anything yet. He's like, I'm definitely not a loser, but I'm not a winner. I didn't win a ring. He's dying to win. He cares about what's important, and he just has that dagger in him. And when I had this conversation with my friend, you forget that this is a guy who every year in the playoffs just get in. This is an 8 seed, and they just get in, and it doesn't matter because once you're in, he's going to take you there. Think about it. I talked about this after game one, how he was defending Giannis in last series against Milwaukee, and he's defending Jalen Brunson. He will take the toughest assignment on the defensive end, and then he's going to go to work on the offensive side. He wants to take all the biggest shots. He wants to be the focal point. He wants to be everything in these playoffs. He also wants to be the villain. And it was so funny because I was talking to my father about this, and a lot of times it's actually helpful before I record the podcast to, you know, have conversations about him. We'll talk, and then I'll think of different things. But I thought he was going to say that, oh, he had this look in his eye, like he wants to be the villain. Like every once in a while, a guy comes along who's, you know, not the greatest player in the league, but all of a sudden you put them in the playoffs and they take their game to a whole new level. And I thought he was talking about a guy like Trae Young, who when they see the Knicks, they all of a sudden they need to go off against the Knicks. There's something about the Knicks. With Jimmy Butler, it's not a Knicks thing. He doesn't care about the Knicks or about Julius Randle, about the rivalry, none of that stuff. He's flaunting. He's just walking around the way he is because it's the playoffs, and this is what he does every single year in the playoffs. He wants to be the villain to everyone. He just wants to be the best player out there. He wants to dominate when it comes playoff time, and it's what he's done throughout his career. So when I had that conversation back with my friend, the whole thing was, yeah, I don't know how much better he makes us. I don't know if he makes us a championship contender. And when I watch this guy, it's like, yeah, if you put him on the Knicks roster, the Knicks roster is probably better than the Heat roster, and we'll get to that a little bit later, the roster breakdown and all that stuff. But the Knicks roster is probably better. If you put him with, I don't know, the guys, Josh Hart and Jalen Brunson and Mitchell Robinson, yeah, maybe they're better. But the point is that this guy, once you get in the playoffs, all of a sudden he's a totally different player. And you're seeing it in this series. You saw it, obviously, in the last series against Milwaukee. And unfortunately for the Knicks and for myself, a Knicks fan, it's kind of haunting me right now. So at any point, he can go off. At any point, he will go off. It feels like every single shot of his is going to go in, and you're terrified of him the entire series. But that's not the reason necessarily why they lost Game 3, and they could still have won Game 1 with Jimmy Butler having an incredible game. So let's dive a little bit deeper. We finally saw the physicality that we thought we were going to get in this game. I thought the Knicks responded really well to it. Julius Randle said after the game, he's like, you want to play physical with me? Sure. Like, he's not intimidated by it, but he also, another thing, he didn't lose his mind. When he gets shoved in the back by Cody Zeller on that one play on the Emmanuel Quickly basket, he gets shoved in the back, and then Isaiah Hartenstein comes and runs to him and shoves Zeller down. So it's like, okay, good for Hartenstein defending himself. But Julius Randle didn't get back up. He didn't go back at him. He just sat there on the floor kind of laughing, like, okay, come at me, like giving him that hand motion, like, come at me. You want to come at me? And he was laughing there, like, you're Cody Zeller. Like, what is this? It's not Bam. It's not Jimmy. And it was almost like good to see that Julius didn't lose his cool. They were down by a lot. They could have lost it. And I watched it back a couple of times. I was like, wait, no. I rewinded it because I was watching it after the game. And I was like, shoot. Of course, they got into a scrummage. And it's this classic. They're losing by a lot. Jimmy Butler was on the side, like, dancing. But, like, who cares what he's doing? He wasn't involved. I watched my guy just go down. And I legitimately feared that he was the one who instigated. He was the one doing something. The only guy who didn't get a technical foul in that play was Julius Randle. Julius Randle just sat there and he's like, okay, take it. And you know what he's going to do? He's going to come out on the court tonight, on Monday night, and he's going to want to dominate. He's like, you want to play physical with me? I'll play physical. And you watch how the Heat do it. They're dirty. Bam Adebayo stepping on guys' ankles. You saw him stepping on Quickly's ankle. You saw him trying to step on Brunson's foot at one point. And I kind of like when Josh Hart did that to Jimmy Butler. Josh Hart kind of awkwardly lands underneath his ankle. If I didn't have Josh Hart on my team, I would hate Josh Hart. And I almost kind of hate him even though he is on my team because he's such a frustrating player at times. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But he also is getting physically involved in this game and he's trying to do the same thing to Miami. And I know Miami probably has more dirty players. Kyle Lowry is a dirty player. Kevin Love is a dirty player. These are guys who are not talented. They're not skilled enough at this point in their careers to be dominating. They know they're savvy and they know they could get away with things and they know how to massage the refs and all these things. So look, I'm not complaining about it. I think this is a good thing. I think the Knicks can play physical. You want to play physical with us? Fine, we'll play physical. They put out this post Miami after the game, and let me see if I can find it, but they put out this post after the game where it's like, you know, Miami, this is exactly what it said, hustle more, battle more, wanted it more. This, the essence of Heat culture, defense. That's what they said after the game that they won. And guess what? Alan Hahn posted it and he's like, gotta own it. This isn't wrong. Everything about this is true. In that game, the Heat, they dominated from the start. They crushed it from the start. They wanted it more than the Knicks. They dominated the Knicks. And when you look at the stats, it's so interesting because this is one of the things I talked to my father about. When you look at the game stats, there wasn't that disparity. There's not this one thing that's glaring out that's like, yeah, this is why they won by 19. It felt like a bigger blowout. Like the fact that the Knicks, I think they cut it to 9 in the third quarter, and I'm going to spin this a positive. I think it's, you know, a bad thing also, the downside of this, but let's start with the positive side. The Knicks cut it to 9 at some point in the third quarter, and that was, it felt like they were getting crushed, and somehow it wasn't that much of a blowout. It was still a 9-point game, and you look at the stats, here's why. The Knicks shot 20% from three, and I said they'll probably not do that again after that game two that they had in Cleveland, after the game one that they had against Miami. I'm like, they're probably not going to shoot 20% from three again, but the fact is, this is what the Knicks have been doing more often than not. You look at this series so far, game, or the playoffs so far, game one against Cleveland, 27%. Game two against Cleveland, 24%. Obviously, they win game one, they lose game two. Again, game three, they shoot 30%. They win that game. Game four, they shoot 27%. They win that game. Game five, they shoot 31% from three. They win that game. And then you go to the Miami series. Game one, they shoot 20% from three. They win that. They lose that game. Only 20%, right? Game two, they shoot 40% from three. They win that game. And game three, they shoot 20% from three again, and they lose. So sometimes it's that simple. They're shooting 28% overall in the playoffs from three-point range. That's not good enough. So they shot 20% from three. That would be the glaring disparity, you would think, right? But no, you look at Miami, they only shot 22%. They actually made one less three than the Knicks made. So it must have been overall shooting percentage. The Knicks must have had a way lower shooting percentage. Not really. The Knicks shot 34% from the field total, 31 of 91. Miami was 35 of 90, right? So only made four more shots than the Knicks from the field. So you look at free throw disparity. There's got to be something there. So that's where there's a bit of a disparity. Yes, the Knicks scored 12 less free throws than Miami, but they only took 9 less. And I know 9 is a lot. That is a big disparity in an NBA game. But also Miami was taking it to the cup. They were taking it to the Knicks. You look at rebounds, pretty much the same. 50 rebounds for Miami, 48 for the Knicks. The Knicks actually had 14 offensive rebounds. Miami only had 13. The turnover battle, the exact same, 13-13. So what's happening in this game? The glaring thing that stands out, the one thing, was the Miami Heat had 50 points in the paint. The Knicks only had 36. So those two things, points in the paint and the free throw disparity, those are the two things you could look at. And those two things combined, Miami outscored the Knicks by 26 in those two categories combined. Remember I talked about after the first game that Eric Spoelstra said, hey, we got to stop there. They're getting to the rim after when the Knicks went up 12 right away in game one. And they're up 12 halfway through the third quarter. And they played that mic'd up of Eric Spoelstra saying, we got to stop them. We can't let them go downhill. We can't let them going to the rim. That was the biggest adjustment in this series. Miami's building a wall, and this is where the Knicks' bad shooting is starting to hurt them. It didn't hurt them against Cleveland. In game two, they shot 40% from three against Miami, so they won that game. So how can they shoot 25 to 30%? Because that's what they are on a good night, right? On a bad night, obviously, they're going to be 20%, but on a decent, solid, average night, they'll shoot between 25 and 33% from three. So how can they win while still doing that? Miami is building a wall from their bigs. They don't let the Knicks get inside. So whether it's Jalen Brunson, he keeps getting cut off. They're just putting three guys on him. And what I talked about with the Knicks, how they were sagging off the corners against Cleveland, Miami's doing the same thing against the Knicks. So like, RJ Barrett, you want to make a three-pointer from the wing? Sure, let's see you do it. Same thing with Josh Hart. You want to make a corner three-pointer? Let's see you do it. And the Knicks are not shooting well enough to be able to overcome that. So every time the Knicks tried to drive to the lane, they're getting cut off and there was nothing they can do. There was so much dribbling 30 feet from the basket for the Knicks because you see, okay, Jalen Brunson dribble outside. He's like, I can't do anything. There's four guys in front of me. All right, I'll kick it on the wing to Julius. Dribble. All right, nothing doing here. Let's kick it to RJ, see what he can do. That's not going to happen. Nothing's going to change in the Knicks until the Knicks start moving around on offense and they start hitting their shots. So the key to the Knicks, and look, the Heat also only shot 22%, but they are able to get inside. They're getting whatever they wanted. How many times did it seem like Jimmy Butler or Bam Adebayo caught the ball within 10 feet of the basket and was able to go to work on a Knicks defender? The Knicks needed to deny the basketball from getting that deep, and the Knicks need to get the ball deep. It's old school basketball. It's physical. It's tough defense. And the shot making in this series is not going to be great. But in this game tonight, one team's going to have to start making shots. And I think a huge thing for the Knicks, what they're going to have to do to turn it around, what they're going to have to do to change it up, is they have to change the lineup. Look, the Knicks, they sucked all around, right? It wasn't just one area. I thought they didn't have enough energy on offense. They didn't have enough energy on defense. They looked discombobulated the entire time. In transition, they weren't good, which is the sad part because they forced 13 turnovers, and they only had 9 points off of 13 turnovers. They weren't getting on the fast break and getting easy buckets that the Knicks are usually getting. They're so good at getting, especially guys like Josh Hart, especially guys like Obi Toppin and RJ Barrett, those guys who can go downhill. Emmanuel Quickley, who might be out for this game. Also, Quentin Grimes gets out in transition. So the Knicks need to get back to doing that. Now, I said there was a negative and a positive to all this. The positive is that, obviously, like I said, the Knicks can get better at all these categories, all these things we just talked about. Just shoot the ball a little bit better. There's adjustments that you can make, right? I think Quentin Grimes should be in the starting lineup. The Knicks' best lineup all season long was when Quentin Grimes was starting. And especially with Emmanuel Quickley probably not playing in this game, I think a huge adjustment would be to bring in Quentin Grimes. You have another shooter on the floor. They don't have to sag off. And when Josh Hart had the ball at the top of the key, you could see the Miami defender was standing at the free throw line. They're like, shoot, we'll give you 15 feet to shoot this three-pointer. We don't care. We don't think you're going to make it. And so if they're sagging off every one of the Knicks shooters, bring in a guy like Quentin Grimes, who's so good at cutting off the ball, so good at moving without the ball and then getting an open shot from it, let him be out there on the court. You also give him the confidence back. He's been lacking some confidence when he's in the game. He's been looking for his spot. Give him the confidence back that we want you out there. We want you shooting. We want you to be a big part of this offense. He's a good enough defender to defend Jimmy Butler, even if he's not as big as Josh Hart. And then Josh Hart can come in off the bench. That energy off the bench, that's also, you need a guy, just like Kyle Lowry is energy off the bench for Miami, you need a guy who's energy off the bench for the Knicks. So if Emmanuel Quickley is hurt, Emmanuel Quickley was great energy off the bench, and I think Tom Thibodeau waited way too long to bring him in. When the Knicks went on a little bit of a run to start the third quarter, I thought he should have brought in Emmanuel Quickley right away, because Emmanuel Quickley was so good at the end of the first half, and I thought he waited way too long with his starters. By the time he brought Quickley in, the game was out of hand and the game was over. So it was really a shame that he waited that long to bring him in. So Tom Thibodeau can't be as stubborn. Maybe you bring in Deuce McBride now that there's no Quickley, a guy who can play defense, a guy who can shoot threes, a guy who also wants to get out in transition. So the positive in all this, there's adjustments you can make. The Knicks aren't going to shoot 20% shooting again, you hope. Hopefully they do better than 16 from whatever it was, 16 of 22 from the free throws. Hopefully there's not as large of a three free throw disparity in this game. But on the other side of it, the negative side of it is that Miami wasn't that great. Miami wasn't that good, and yet they still won by 19 points. They still blew out the Knicks. Yeah, it felt closer than that throughout the game. But at the end of the day, the Knicks were blown out in this game, regardless of how it looked. And so the negative side of this for the Knicks is you were blown out and you didn't play, didn't play their best game. That wasn't the best game. That there's another level they could take this to. That's got to be scary if you're a Knicks fan. So in game four tonight, you're going to be without a key contributor, probably in Emmanuel Quickley. You're going to have to find a way to win this game. It's not going to be an easy game to win. But I still believe the Knicks have better talent. So if I look at these two teams, I thought the aberration throughout these playoffs was the Heat's three-point shooting. All these guys like Gabe Vincent and Max Strus and whoever else is playing well for them, playing so well, I didn't think that was going to be able to be sustained. And we saw in Game 3 that wasn't really sustained. Those guys didn't play that well. So maybe they'll come back and have a better game, and that's the negative way to look at it. But I don't think that talent's that good. I don't think they're going to have a better game, whereas I trust this Knicks talent. I trust this Knicks team that I watched every game this season. I think the talent is there. They just need to start to play better. And I said that in the first round also. I didn't think they played that great. They didn't play that great, and they were able to win games. But now you get to the second round, you get against tougher teams, you get against a guy like Jimmy Butler, who's a playoff player who can dominate you at all levels on the defensive side, in transition, on the other side, at the free throw line, at the three-point line, down low. You have to start to play better. So going into tonight, the couple of things, I trust that the Knicks will play better. I trust that Tom Thibodeau will make the proper adjustments. Look, he's not as good a coach as Eric Spoelstra. I'll admit that, but I think he'll make the proper adjustments that he needs to make in order for this team to be better, in order for this team to have a better chance in this series and in this game to win. Whether that means however they change the starting lineup, however guys are moving around on offense so that there is more shooting, and also adjusting the defense, maybe taking a book out of Spoelstra's page. Yeah, you don't want to sag off those shooters. Those three-point shooters are pretty good at times. But you'll live, or if you have enough energy, you can get back to those three-point shooters like we talked about, which they did a lot of times in this game. But don't let Bam and Jimmy dominate down low one-on-one against defenders. There was a point in this game where a double came. I think Jalen Brunson came to double Jimmy, but he came soft. He came late. He was kind of halfway. And then Jimmy was just like, okay, if you're not going to fully double me, then I'll just shoot it. I still think a lot of times when Jimmy gets doubled, he's like, oh, you're going to double me? I'll shoot it. Like, it almost entices him to shoot it more. So that could almost be an advantage if you force him to shoot. So that's what I think about game four. But the other thing that's going to have to happen in this game, the Knicks are going to need someone to take over. Every game in this series, Jimmy Butler played in the first game and the third game. He took over. The Knicks have won games throughout this playoffs with just team effort, team basketball. It's one of the most positive things I talked about in this series for the Knicks. In these playoffs for the Knicks, it's what makes them fun to watch. But you get to a point in the second round of the playoffs in a must-win game on the road, you need a guy to be a superstar for you. Talent always wins in the NBA. I don't care if it's Julius Randle. I don't care if it's Jalen Brunson. Whoever it is, you need someone who's going to take over. I thought it could have been Emmanuel quickly off the bench. He looked like he was playing a lot better. His shot was going in, which is upsetting if he does miss significant time or any time at all, that he was actually seemed to be getting in a good rhythm. Tibbs was still not playing him enough. I thought Tibbs should have played him more because he was getting in a good rhythm. But right now, now's the time. If you're Jalen Brunson, you got to look at this game. And he took over second half of game two. He took over game one down the stretch also against Cleveland. So he has to take over in this game, I think. Or Julius Randle also. Maybe it's even RJ Barrett who just takes over in this game. But there has to be one guy who takes command and says, I'm going to be that guy. From the comments that they all said after the game, after game three, you hear all of them want to be that guy. All of them want to try and do that. But you have to come out with better energy. There's no excuse for the low energy. There's no excuse for any of it. You have to come out, play harder, play stronger, be tough, be physical, because you know Miami's going to be, you have to outbeat them. You have to outplay them. And similar to what happened, that was the Knicks' identity when they won all those games in 2021. Then you get into the playoffs and the other team ratchets up the intensity. So the Knicks, that was their identity this year, where they were able to play hard, play tough, play physical, play strong, play together. Now you go up against a team that does those same things. You have to take it to another level. You have to match their energy. You have to go up to that level with them. And I still think the Knicks have the talent to win this game. But like I said, Miami didn't play their best game and still won and dominated in game three. So I'm not confident that the Knicks can win this game. I know they can win this game. I'm not confident they will, but let's see what happens tonight. Hopefully we get a superstar performance. Speaking of superstar performances, we head over to the west side of the bracket and we look at a couple of other games. And specifically Phoenix and Denver. I want to start there. Obviously, Phoenix ties the series at 2 last night. But I wanted to look at the Suns stats. I looked at the Suns stats from, I guess it was Friday night. And I see Kevin Durant, 39 points. Devin Booker, 47 points. Durant had 8 assists. Booker had 9 assists. I was like, these guys can't keep it up. Nobody else on the team had more than 7 points. I was like, there's no way. They can't keep this up. They're not going. That was the one game they win. You have one game where they combine for 70-something points between the two of them. You have 39 or really 80-something points from the two of them. You have 39 from Durant. You have 47 from Booker. They combine for 17 assists. That's not going to happen again. It's just not going. There's no way that's going to happen again. They played 43 and 42 minutes. I was wrong. It's going to happen again. In game four, and these are the stats. I mean, they're not as impressive, but they each had 36 points. Booker had 12 assists. Durant had 6 assists. Durant played 44 minutes. Booker played 40 minutes. I mean, in each one of these games, it's crazy. They're going to need this. Now, Shamit just goes off at the end of that game. He had 19 points. He hits all those threes at the end. He basically also goes 5-for-8 from three. But Shamit's a playoff player. Shamit's a guy who's done this before in the playoffs. It's not the first time that Landry Shamit has come up big in a spot like this. I'm not saying they should come to rely on it. I'm not saying that it's going to happen every game, but all you need is one or two games like that, and that's how you win a series. You only have to win 4 of these. So he did that in one game, but Kevin Durant and Booker doing this over and over again. This is why you get generational guys. This is why you give up the extra picks and the extra players. Bill Simmons was talking all week, every single guy he had on his podcast, I don't understand. Do they really have to give up Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges? Wouldn't it be nice if they had someone else who could do something on this team? Yeah, it would be nice, but you don't need it. You have Kevin effing Durant. It would be better if you had a more of a full team. And I think Denver's really good, but now the series is tied. And this is not to take anything away from what Nikola Jokic did. Nikola Jokic had 53 points and 11 assists in game 4, and they still lost by 5. So yeah, I think that this series is going to come down to these superstars. It always does in the NBA. And if I was Denver, I'd like my chances still. You still have Murray. You still have Porter. You still have Eric Gordon. Or Aaron Gordon, I should say. But your bench got thoroughly outplayed. You got 11 total points from your bench in this game. Whereas the Suns, all of a sudden, their biggest concern was the bench. They get 40 points from the bench. And then obviously they still get their 72 points from their superstars. This is what's going to be time and time again. It seems like they're not going away. And something that I noticed in this game also is that Booker's the alpha. And I guess Chris Paul is still a great player, but it seems like with CP out now, he's running the offense. There was a mic'd up clip of him talking up KD, like, I want you to take that shot. You're open. You're going to take it. It's so interesting with KD. KD is this generational talent like we've never seen when it comes to scoring. And yet he needs somebody to tell him how great he is constantly. He's like a high maintenance girlfriend who's like, oh, you need to constantly tell me how good I am. He's a guy who, for some reason, no matter how amazing he is, he's like needs to be told this constantly and needs to be built up constantly, and he can't take over. He just needs to play off you. You do your thing and I'll play off you. So maybe that's why it didn't work in Brooklyn, because he was supposed to be the man and everyone was supposed to play off him. Didn't work like that in OKC. He goes obviously to Golden State and he has Steph Curry, this generational superstar, and he could just play off him, right? And you have Curry like, no, I want you to shoot that. You're great. I'm great, but you're even greater. The same thing's happening in this series. That all these assist numbers that you're seeing from Devin Booker, it's like he obviously is this great player in Kevin Durant, and Devin Booker is the one who needs to tell him, yes, shoot that. I'm passing it to you so you can shoot. He's taking over the game. He's taking all the biggest shots. Devin Booker is. Devin Booker is the man. Devin Booker is growing up in front of our eyes and becoming one of, and I know we did this in the playoffs 2 years ago. We talked, oh, is he top 10 now? We did this last year with Jason Tatum, and we'll talk about him in a second. It's weird. It's a weird situation what's happening right now with Devin Booker and Kevin Durant. But we've seen this in the playoffs before with Booker in particular. We talked about Jimmy Butler before. Guys in the playoffs who just are that guy. And no matter how incredible the talent is of Kevin Durant, he doesn't have to be that guy in this series for this team. Obviously, you have Chris Paul, but even with Paul out, you almost have this incredible version of Devin Booker, specifically with Paul out, because he's running the offense and he could do all that scoring. Chris Paul's not that player anymore. So even though you have the leadership and you have the savvy of Chris Paul, you have a quarter of what he once was as a player. So it takes away from all those other things that he does. But you have this guy with Kevin Durant who's playing at this level, and you could just let Kevin Durant go out there and just be a pure scorer and that's it. He's not responsible for anything else. He doesn't have to worry about anything else. That's when Kevin Durant is fully unlocked. We saw it with Golden State, and now we're seeing it with Phoenix. And that could become a real problem for whoever faces them in the playoffs, even if they get out of this round, especially if they get out of this round. Now, Matt Ishbia. This is going to be a big talking point. I didn't watch any of the shows today, but I'm sure there's going to be a big talking point. So who is he? He's the new owner of the Suns and the Phoenix Mercury, who are the two teams, the WNBA and NBA team, obviously, the Phoenix Suns. And why am I talking about him? Because he got into a little bit of an altercation last night with Nikola Jokic. Now, he's a new owner. I think he's been around maybe for a year. But it's so interesting because just yesterday I was listening to a podcast he was on with Bill Simmons, and he kind of talks about these things that you feel like are, oh, great talking points, for easy for a billionaire to say. But he talks about them and he sounds sincere when he says them, and then he actually backs them up. So this guy, he loves basketball. He actually played at Michigan State. He said he was the end of the bench, a point guard. He never played really, and he wasn't very good at basketball. But he said he was smart. He always knew the court. He knew the game. He was almost like in practice. He was always give high effort, high energy level, and he was kind of like a player coach in practice. He averaged 25 points per game, of course, in high school, because just to be that level on Michigan State, even to be the last guy on the bench, you still have to, like, just, it's crazy. Whatever. Not the point. The point is he was never going to make it far as a basketball player, so he started a career as a, I think he does mortgages. And the point is, he always said that his whole career, his goal was never money. He never thought about money. His whole goal was to be successful. All he wanted to be in life was successful. He said, when you make money the goal, and obviously there's different ways to define success. Some people define success as money. I know people like that, but I'm not one of them. But the point is, he said, when you make money the goal, then you're going to fail. You're always going to be frustrated. You're always going to be disappointed. You won't reach your goal, and then also you won't get money. He said, but if you make success your goal, you'll reach your goals. You'll always try and go for your goals. And if you get to your goals, if you work on hard enough to get to your goals, the money will come. He said, and if you if it doesn't, at least you reach your goals. At least you had fun, because winning is fun. And if you're reaching your goals, you're obviously winning, because whatever goals you set for yourself, you know, it's competition. Okay, now let me try and reach that. Let me try and get to the next thing. It was a great thing that he said, but, you know, easy for you to say, you're a billionaire. But he said that was his motto with his business. He always built it up. And now he says with the Phoenix Suns, he wants to do the same thing. It's not about the money. And he's actually walking the walk. He's not just, he's putting his money where his mouth is. I'm kind of literally and figuratively, because he's giving out next year a free service. All his games are going to be free to watch, streaming online. You don't have to pay for it. There's no NBA League Pass. There's no paying for a cable service. There's no paying for extra channels on your TV provider. It is free to watch Phoenix Suns basketball. He wants people to watch. And he says, because he wants the Suns to be great and he wants people to watch the Suns and he wants them to have fans. He said, everything will come with that. He's not even thinking beyond that. He just wants, he knows he wants to make it accessible for anyone and everyone. It's such an interesting concept that he talked about, but he's also backing it up. So this guy, I fell in love with this guy when I heard this conversation. He sounded sincere. He sounded authentic. He sounded like an awesome dude. Then you watch the game yesterday and he's sitting on the sideline. He's sitting courtside at an NBA game, and he even talked about how he ended up as an owner, which is just another side piece. He ended up as an owner because he said, you know, a lot of people put bids in when a team became available, but I didn't just put a bid in. He said, the second I realized I had enough money to do something like this, he said, I started making relationships. I'd fly around the country, meeting with different owners, sitting at games, sitting in boxes with them, meeting with Adam Silver. I created relationships over 5-6 years so that by the time a team came up, I wasn't just a bid on a piece of paper. I was actually a name. I was a friend of theirs. I was someone that they knew because I put in all this work. Either way, just a super cool guy. So he's 40-something years old, and if you don't know him, he probably just seems like kind of like a douche sitting there on the sideline. You know, 40-something-year-old billionaire who just bought the Suns, and the ball goes out of play, and he holds the ball, and he holds it a little bit too long, and Jokic is trying to grab it from him, and he's kind of fighting back with Jokic a little bit, so Jokic kind of pushes off him a little bit with his forearm. And what Jokic said after the game, though, is right. Like, Jokic is like, he's a fan at that point. I get it, you own the team. I get it, you're a billionaire. And I get it, he's actually a guy who I like, now that I listen to this interview of his, and I kind of like him, and he seems like a good, genuine dude. But when you get to that point, you can't do that. Yeah, you own the team, cool, but you have to know your place. You have to know who you are. At that point, when you're sitting on the sideline, you can't influence the game. You're just a fan in that spot. And when he pulled the ball back and held it a little bit longer, you're influencing the game. Jokic wanted to go quick. He wanted to get the ball back before the defense was set. You can't do that if you're Matt Ishbia. And this is a guy, the reason I told you that whole backstory is because I want to tell you, this is not me just looking at a 40-year-old billionaire like, oh, what a douche. No, this is actually a guy that I like. This is a guy who I learned about who he is. And I'm like, okay, that guy I like. And yet still, I agree with Jokic in that spot that once you're sitting there on the court, you're just a fan like everyone else. And you can't do that. That's all I have to say. The series is going to get awesome. I can't wait for the rest of this series. All right, we have two more series that we're going to talk about. Obviously, the Sixers and the Celtics is a great series, and Warriors and Lakers is a great series, but I'm going to take a quick break. I'll be back in a second with the rest of this. All right, coming back. The Sixers and the Celtics are tied 2-2, and yet right now it feels like both teams should not be happy with how they've played so far in this series. If I'm the Celtics, it feels like at any point I could run away. And if I just ramp up the intensity and start hitting shots and start playing defense and play downhill and run and control the pace, then I should be up 3-1, if not have swept this series already. And it just feels like they keep getting lulled into this pace that they don't want to play at, that Harden and Joel Embiid want to play at and go slow, and the Celtics seem to just match that instead of being like, okay, they want to do that, let's make them play at our pace. And then it seems like every time the Celtics remember, hey, let's try and do things our way for a little bit, they go on these spurts where they look like the best team in basketball and they look like the team that went to the finals last year and they look unbeatable. Another concern for the Celtics, and this is maybe even more concerning, is what Jaylen Brown said after the game. Another thing that I talked about in a previous episode that I didn't fully hash out was, I said it looks like they're taking turns. I also said it feels like Jaylen Brown is just checked out. Jaylen Brown in the first half of this game goes off, and Jason Tatum can't hit a shot, right? In the first half, I think he didn't have a single field goal made. I'm pretty sure he had 2 points at the half. And at this point, Jaylen Brown is going off. And then the last, I think it was the last 5 minutes of play, because I know he had 23 points. He had a big three to get him to 23. Jaylen Brown did. And then the last maybe 10 minutes of play, or sorry, maybe 5 minutes of play, and then the 5 minutes of overtime, so 10 minutes total. I think he attempted three total shots and didn't have any points. And they asked him after the game what he thought about that. He's like, I guess I have to demand the ball more. Like, it feels like he's so separate from the team right now. But worse, it feels like him and Jason Tatum, where they were so together, are so separate. And when one guy's up, the other guy's down. What was so amazing about this team was that they could together at the same time just dominate, and they could both be up at the same time. And right now, it is not that at all. It's a seesaw, and when one guy's up, the other guy's down. There's a Marcus Smart issue here where he's not effective some nights, but he has to be out there because he's the heart and soul of the team. And it just feels like at any point yet, this team can turn it on and they'll dominate because they're so much better than the Sixers. And even with everything that happened in this game, you know, if they start to go a little bit earlier, right, which you could blame on coaching for not calling a timeout and not trying to get them set and have them run a set play at the end of the overtime. But if they go a little bit earlier, I should say, if Tatum starts going to the rim a little bit earlier, then the kick out to Smart happens quicker, and the three-pointer that ultimately goes happens before the shot clock, and they win that game, and they're up 3-1 in the series after trailing the entire game, being down double digits in the fourth quarter. So with everything that happened, it still feels like the Celtics should feel great about themselves, but there's so many question marks, because how many times are we going to see this? They take the foot off the gas. They let Atlanta back into the series because of it, and now they let Houston tie the series. Not Houston. I keep saying Houston because of James Harden. They let Philly tie the series because they took their foot off the gas. And when they felt like, okay, we'll turn it on when we need to, this is what we've talked about, we'll turn it on when we need to, eventually you're giving away games. How many times can you do that? The answer is probably they can keep doing it, because I don't know, are the Heat going to beat them four times in a row? Are the Knicks going to beat them four times in a row? Do you really think that the Sixers are going to win two out of the next three games? I don't. I still think Boston's going to turn it on enough. So maybe the answer is they don't need to turn it on that much. They'll just cakewalk to the finals because they're that much better than everyone else. I don't know. But just, it doesn't feel like this team should feel good about themselves after the way that game played out. On the other side, Philly. It's pretty simple right now. This team goes as far as James Harden goes. I mean, it became abundantly clear in that game, right? James Harden goes 5 for 28 in games 2 and 3 combined, and they lose both of those games. Obviously, we know about the 45-point performance in Game 1. That was incredible. And the question was, are we going to see that again from James Harden? I said we probably won't see that version of James Harden again. He said, yeah, this is me. I just don't have to be this guy. Well, apparently in Game 4, James Harden realized, I have to be that guy. He has another 42 points. He has 9 assists and 8 rebounds. Had 4 steals in the game. Had a block shot. Was all over the place on the defensive end, which you don't see a lot from James Harden. But the even more impressive part is he had the 42 points on only 23 shot attempts. He shot 16 of 23 from the field. 6 of 9 from 3. And it felt like every time he was trying to get it to Embiid. And down the stretch of this game, Embiid is just going 1 against 5. They just build a wall against him. And he's standing there at the top of the key. And it felt like he was throwing up brick after brick. And every time they needed a big shot from James Harden, he hit it. It felt like, all right, I want to keep feeding you because I know you're our important player, Joel Embiid, and I know you need to get going at some point in the series. But fine, get it back to me. I'll carry this team when I need to. The floater in the lane at the end of the game, at the end of regulation, I should say, and then the three-pointer in the corner ultimately won it. And it was so confusing. It was so discombobulating at the end of that game that when Smart missed the three, I was like, all right, double overtime. I was like, wait, shoot. No, Philly's actually up by a point. It didn't feel like Philly should have been up by a point because of how poorly they played down the stretch. And after the game, I saw Doc Rivers was complaining about the push-off from Jason Tatum. Here's the thing about the push-off. I don't care that guys are pushing off so much. I hate the complaining to the referees. I actually think they should let it go, because what happened was Tatum sticks his forearm out a little bit. Not even that far, but yes, he definitely put his forearm out a little bit. And then he hits an incredible shot, but part of the reason he hit that incredible shot is because the defender is flopping out of the way to try and get a call. At that point in the game, in overtime or for the fourth quarter, whatever it is, just recover and get back on D. Get in his face. You're strong enough. He didn't push you that hard that you're totally out of the play. Yes, he pushed off of you. He created a little bit of space. But I don't want referees calling that in that spot. Not at that point of the game. You don't. Is that what you really want, Doc Rivers? You really want that? Because they could call that stuff on you too. You want them all of a sudden, James Harden hits a step back three, and now he traveled. He took two steps there. It's the James Harden hop step. You really want that to be the case? How about instead of complaining after the game about that call, maybe you're upset because your team was up 15, and instead of playing the rest of the game, they just ran the same isolation over and over again while you stood there on the sideline. Just this lifeless isolation with Embiid just barreling into three guys and missing shots and taking contested shots with three guys on him. It wasn't fun. It wasn't good offense. It didn't look like an MVP, I'll tell you that much. He looked scared. He looked soft. He looked like unsure of himself and out of control. I mean, it got to the point where PJ Tucker grabbed a huge offensive rebound. Tobias Harris grabbed a huge offensive rebound. James Harden grabbed a big rebound. And the only guy who wasn't doing anything on either side was Embiid. He was dragging his feet up the court. There was one point where they actually got a turnover. I think it was one of Harden's four steals. He stepped in front of a pass, and they're running the other way. And you see Doc Rivers is jumping up and down, yelling from the sideline. He has to yell at Embiid to start running. Embiid's dragging his feet up the court. And maybe that's conditioning because he was out, because he's hurt. I don't know what that is. But you have an opportunity now in a tight game down the stretch where you should still have the lead. You had a big lead, and you're dragging your feet up the court. They're milking the clock down to 3 seconds every time. And then with about 3 seconds, he goes to work, starts with maybe 5 seconds, goes to work, either a shot clock violation or takes a contested shot over three guys. The fact that he was able to pass it after all that, pass it to the corner with three guys on him to Harden, I never thought he was going to pass it to Harden. I don't like blame the defender for coming off Harden in that spot. Because why would you expect Embiid to pass it to the corner in that spot? He hadn't done it the entire game. And he had PJ Tucker yelling at him and Tobias Harris yelling at him. These guys like, God, dude, get your head in the game. Get some energy. Which is crazy. They were playing with urgency and he wasn't. The urgency that PJ and Tobias were playing with down the stretch. And Harden had a huge contested rebound there. Harden was all over the place. The urgency he was playing with. This was prime James Harden, and we've never seen him do this in a playoff series where he just takes over, right? Like, Houston James Harden, the big knock on him was he couldn't get it done in the playoffs, but people forget. Yeah, he never won a series, but we've seen him have games like this. We've also seen him have games like Game 2 and 3 where he disappears and was 5 for 28 total in the two games. But Harden now has two 40-point games, and those are the two wins. And it wasn't just the 40 points like I talked about. It's the efficiency he's getting the points in and how much he's doing everywhere else. It felt like at any point Harden could have just taken over that game and put the game away in the fourth quarter, but he's trying to get Embiid involved so bad. He's like, dude, I'm begging for you to just start to play better. I want you to play better. He knows that the team goes as far as he goes, and he couldn't do it. And so if you're the Sixers, after blowing that lead, after seeing how your MVP, your superstar played, you really feel good about yourself? Or is that not the most demoralizing win ever? We talk about demoralizing losses. That's the most demoralizing win. How can they feel good about themselves after that game? I don't know. And by the way, ESPN talked about this at some point on the broadcast. Mark Jackson, I think, was doing... I forget who was doing the game. Not Mark Jackson, but the other Mark... I don't remember his name. So I'm just going to leave it at that. But it was with Doris Burke. And he says to her at some point, he's like, what's so incredible about this team is that there's both Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Can you imagine people wanted to split these two up? People wanted to trade them. But right now, it looks like that again. Yeah, I could imagine that people wanted to split them up. People wanted to trade them. Because guess what? It's clearly severed to the point that it's one guy versus the other guy. And I know this is very reactionary. And so, you know, they'll look great again in game five, the same way they looked in game two and three. And all of a sudden, great. They look great again and they're playing together again, but it still feels like there's been more often than not over the last 2 weeks, over the last 3 weeks, which has been the playoffs, where it's so discombobulated and it's so separate and so not intact with each other. And I don't know how much longer they can go like that. And it seems like, I'm not saying you should break them up if you're a Celtics fan, but it seems like Jaylen Brown is checked out. He's doing his own thing. If he's not scoring, he looked checked out. The ball wasn't even coming his way. When Tatum was drawing doubles, he was kicking it to Horford in the corner. He was kicking it to Marcus Smart. Like, the plays weren't there for Jaylen Brown. I just didn't understand it. Al Horford said after the game, he's like, I'm not upset about this. He's like, this is very encouraging. He's like, this is really encouraging what I saw. And I kind of agree with what he said. It's so easy to overreact, but it's 2-2. They were just talking about this on Simmons, and I want to talk about this with the Knicks a little bit later. But this happens when you're in a playoff series. Every 48 hours, you're swung in one direction. The pendulum keeps swinging back and forth. Like, you're swung in one direction, and then 48 hours later, oh, they won. You're in the other direction, and then it's a loss. Oh, this team sucks. Oh, they won, and I hope I've tried not to be like that with the Knicks. I've been saying things like, you know, here's what they can improve on even though they won. Here's why I think this is not such a bad thing even though they lost. I try and stay positive, but also, you know, after the wins, not try and get too high, and after the losses, not try and get too low. But it's so easy, and Al Horford, I think this is part of his point, so easy to overreact to one game and be like, oh, look at this game. Look, you guys lost. The series is tied 2-2. How could you lose this game? He's like, no, I'm pretty encouraged because when we turned up the intensity, when we turned up the defensive intensity down the stretch, when we started playing with purpose, when we started playing with urgency down the stretch, we came back and we actually took the lead and forced overtime and all that stuff. Yeah, that's true. That's a positive, but it's also a negative. It's the negative that I talked about. That why? What's going to get you guys to be in that point all the time? Why is it that a lot of times you're not doing that? Why is it that you have to get to the point that we had to turn it on? Why can't you come start a game like that? Why can't you come out of the gate like that? Why can't you start a third quarter like that and be angry and be working downhill? Because if you do that, you'll dominate. And you won't just dominate Philly in the next two games. You'll dominate the rest of the playoffs. So this, like I said, I still think they have the most talent and they have the greatest potential. But I just want to see it for 48 minutes. And I don't think we've seen it yet in this postseason, really. And quickly back to Embiid, in case you're wondering, well, that's what Embiid does. He gets the double team on him. He's the MVP and he kicks it out. He's making a play for his teammate. He hadn't thrown it. The only time he threw it actually off the double team was to Tobias Harris earlier in the I think it was in overtime or in the fourth quarter. He gets the ball. He gets the double team. He's standing like in his spot, like on the wing, like around the free throw area of free throw line extended. And he kicks it in the corner to Harris. And Harris looked like shocked. Like he like when you throw a ball at someone and they like quickly like realize that the ball's coming their way, so they catch it, so they adjust. Like he flinched and like quickly caught it and then passed it right back to Embiid. Like he was shocked that he was being thrown the ball. Your teammates are not ready because they see that every possession is just going to be you isolating for 24 seconds and then taking a bad shot while you're triple team. Luckily, Harden was ready for that pass in that corner in that spot, stayed ready and hit that shot, but Embiid got lucky. Like I said, the Celtics, I think, could be really good. I'm just kind of confused by that series and by both of those teams. Let's talk about the last series. They play again tonight. It's the Warriors and the Lakers. And the Lakers have been really impressive. They're up 2-1 in the series. The Warriors, they have the one Draymond Green game in game two where Steph Curry doesn't even have to score that much. And that's the point in all of this. We haven't seen the LeBron game yet. We haven't seen the Steph Curry game yet. And that's such a positive for the Lakers because the Lakers are up 2-1 and it feels like LeBron's still conserving his energy. He's still going to have a night where he goes off and just has a crazy LeBron game. We haven't seen him take the scoring to the next level. At home, game four, a chance to go up 3-1 on the Warriors. A Warrior team that, yes, has the championship pedigree, but doesn't have the fightness and the toughness, the fight, the toughness and the will. Fightness, it's a good word. Fight and toughness. But it could be really any-ness. So, yeah, fightness, toughness, and the will of some of these teams that we've seen in the past Warrior teams. Like, we saw how bad they were on the road this year. So, maybe put them on the brinks. They weren't good on the road all year. Now you're at home. You're the Lakers. You have a chance to go up 3-1 in the series. LeBron comes out and has a masterful LeBron game. I could see that happening. The only thing is the league knows that that might happen. So in comes the extender, Scott Foster. Scott Foster is known for two things. Scott Foster is one, known for his record, obviously, against Chris Paul, right? And the other thing he's known for is he is the series extender. Whenever the NBA wants to extend a series, they put Scott Foster on the game that they need the team that's down to lose. And why wouldn't the NBA want to extend the series? They've had record sales. The prices are insane on the secondary market. It's at record prices for a second round playoff series, both in Oakland and in Los Angeles. They've had record TV ratings, TV viewings for this second round of these playoffs. These numbers are matching last year's finals with the Lakers, LeBron James, Steph Curry, and the Warriors, the big fan bases, the two superstar names. And these games are starting at 10 p.m. and they're still having record numbers across the board. So of course the NBA wants the series to be extended. So in comes Scott Foster. So I'm all over Warriors money line tonight. I think they'll win. But if I'm the Warriors fan, I can't feel very good about this. The Lakers are up 2-1 and LeBron feels like he still hasn't entered the chat yet, quote unquote. That's got to be scary if you are a Warriors fan or rooting for the Warriors or a Steph Curry fan. The bright side for them. It doesn't feel like Steph Curry had that one game where he went off yet, but we're waiting for that also. We'll see what happens. They need it more. They need it tonight. We'll see what happens tonight in game four. I'll continue to enjoy that series. I do hope the Warriors win because I'd love to see the series go seven. So I want to see it go back. Let's tie it up 2-2 and make it a three-game series. Same goes for the Knicks. I want them to tie it up. And look, a lot of people are giving hate to Tibbs on Twitter right now. A lot of people are hating on their shooting. The sagging off is not giving. The thing is, I talked about I want Randall or Brunson to take over. Randall and Brunson can only take over if they get their space. I really think Quentin Grimes should start tonight because they need spacing. They desperately need the spacing. But like I said, the Knicks had two games like this. I went and looked back at the stats from game two against Cleveland, when they just also lost by 17 points and got blown out in that game. And what I thought about that game was, look, the Knicks, they got blown out, but there were clear stats that showed why they got blown out. It's harder to see from the stats, and I talked about this earlier on the podcast, why the Knicks lost. So maybe the Knicks are just the worst team, and they'll go down 3-1, and maybe they'll push it to 6, but they'll lose this series. Maybe that's possible, but the same thing. I don't want to get too high. I don't want to get swung back and forth. So no matter what happens tonight, even if they lose tonight, like I said, I love this team. I'm hopefully going to be in the building for game five. And if it's the last game of the season for the Knicks, I love this team. I loved rooting for them. Hopefully they win tonight. It's 2-2. And that game's a game that swings the series completely. I don't know. But either way, or maybe they're down 3-1 and they somehow that's the game that they win to go send it back to Miami. And maybe they lose down to Miami in game five. I still think this series is far from over. I still think we've seen it go back and forth. And to overreact, I know game one was tough. I know game three was tough. But they were tough for different reasons. So I still think to overreact to those two games, game three or game two rather, you didn't blow them out. I think the Knicks still haven't played their best basketball in the series at all. It's going to be tougher without Emmanuel quickly. But I think there's adjustments to be made, and I hope Tom Thibodeau adjusts and properly sees these adjustments that need to be made in this game. Take advantage of your bench. Take advantage of Obi Toppin. Take advantage of Quentin Grimes, who can shoot. Take advantage of Deuce McBride, who can shoot and play defense. I'm looking forward to this Knicks game tonight, and let's go Knicks. I hope they win. I want to talk about one more football-related topic. Football's always king, and an interesting article came out about Mekhi Becton, because Mekhi Becton tweeted a tweet because they asked Robert Saleh, all of the offensive line positions are open. And he said, yeah, it's going to be a competition at all five. We're going to play our best five. And Mekhi Becton tweeted, I am the left tackle. And Robert Saleh was put in a position where he's a player's coach. He's a player's first coach. He loves the players. And I saw real growth from Robert Saleh. I've been down on him, but I saw real growth from him here and a positive thing. And that's why I wanted to mention it, because I didn't want to let it pass by without mentioning something positive about Robert Saleh. He went out into the press conference. Mekhi deleted the tweet. So I guess they had a private conversation, but he then said, Mekhi, you have to earn it. You haven't been healthy. You haven't been good. You haven't been able to stay in shape. And it's awesome that you've been working out and getting back into shape, but that's not how this works. Yeah, you worked out, you put all this work in, but now you have to prove it on the field. You still have to prove it. Come in with a chip on your shoulder, the chip on the shoulder that got you to this point, that you're in great shape again, the chip on your shoulder that got you to this point, that you're back in the conversation. That's the spot that you should be in. We didn't pick up the fifth year option on you because how could we? You have played one game in the last 2 years. When Mekhi Becton is healthy and on the field, he's one of the best in the league. But be that guy. Come in angry. Come in wanting to prove a point. But don't be salty. Don't be like, oh, I'm the guy. You haven't earned anything yet. And I didn't think Robert Saleh had that discipline level in him. And I was happy to see it. And it's also good to see publicly sometimes, to know that there's going to be a certain level of accountability. You know there's going to be that with Rodgers in the building. And maybe this is already the Aaron Rodgers effect on the team. But if it is, I'm excited. I'm excited to see how far this team can go if there's a real sense of accountability. Look, one of the things we talk about with the Jets, you could bring in Aaron Rodgers, you could bring in different names, different places, different people on the jersey, but it's still the same old Jets. I don't think it's the same old Jets, especially not if they're doing things the right way and they're holding people accountable and they're going to make players earn everything. Look, we see this with the Yankees right now. There's no accountability. So when something happens, when you make bad plays, when you have poor fundamentals and you're in the lineup the next day batting sixth and playing left field, why would you get any better? Why would you change anything? Why would you care to? It's the same thing with Mekhi Becton. Mekhi Becton, it's time to get better. I know that the workouts, all that stuff on Twitter looks great. All the stuff on Instagram looks great. All the stuff on social media that you're doing and saying looks fine. but it's time to actually do it on the field and make your presence felt. All right, that's all I'm going to say about that. Knicks tonight, Warriors and Lakers tonight. We'll talk after game four, hopefully before game five. It'll either be a sad, sad podcast, or it'll be a very happy podcast going back to the Madison Square Garden tied at two. Like I said, I hate that there's that pendulum that swings back and forth every 48 hours, but that's sports. That's what sports does to you. I was thinking about it with the Rangers today, because somebody posted a video like the top 10 most fun plays of the season with the Rangers, and I watched it and I was like, there were fun moments. These were 10 moments that were legitimate fun moments for me that I genuinely enjoyed. And of course, they fired the head coach. There needs to be a fall guy, especially with the way New Jersey came out and played the first two games of the series against Carolina, although they played a lot better at home in game three. But still, there needed to be someone to take the fall. It sucks that it's Gallant. Hopefully, whoever comes in, the focus should be to develop the two young kids. But we'll see. There's issues with this team right now. But that doesn't mean I don't love this team. It wasn't last year. But it's hard to compare to last year. Hopefully, next year, maybe the expectation will be lower because of whatever happens this offseason and because of how this season ended. And we can, you know, build on that, and it'll be an even better season. It'll become as a little bit of a surprise, and we can see some of that fight. But that's all you want to see with these teams. You want to see fight with these teams. You want to see accountability. And every day you can react in the moment. I react in the moment. I was pissed off that the Rangers did what they did. I wish they were still in the playoffs right now. But at the same time, that's sports. And we rarely ever win. We're rarely ever going to be happy at the end of the day. But if you are a Knicks fan, enjoy these moments. Enjoy the fact that there's a game tonight. Get fired up. Get excited. Watch your Knicks play a second round playoff series. It's May already. Jeez, it's almost the middle of May, and your team is playing basketball still. How awesome is that? You wouldn't believe me if I told you that at the beginning of the season, the middle of May, the Knicks would be going into game four of the second round of the playoffs. That's awesome. So expectations, of course, they're adjusted properly because you never know the next time you'll be back in this situation again. Take advantage of the opportunity that you have in front of you, but also enjoy and appreciate the moment. That's my message to everyone. Appreciate the moment, but take advantage of the opportunity. And until next time, I leave you with that. You were the best nights of my life. You got the light that always shines. I miss the way that you move and the way I get high when you take me to your heights, like I'm standing in the sky. I see your subway cars and your old graffiti. I breathe your air when I land in another city. I'll be that one that's got you printed on my bones. Yeah, you're all I know. Everywhere I go, oh, I ain't changed it up, oh, oh. Always on my road, I'm still New York. You're the only, oh, oh, that I'll ever know, oh, oh. My concrete walls, I'm still New York. I'm still New York. Ooh. Oh, I'm still New York. Ooh. Yeah, I wanna drive down. See the birds flying on the high line. With the sidewalks burning, we pray for rain in July. I want the Yankees 99, yeah. And the Knicks on a sold out night. When the curtains close and the Broadway streets are alive, hey. I need your heartbeat close, don't you ever leave me. And I breathe your air when I land in another city. And I'll be that one that's got you printed on my bones. Yeah, you're all I know. Everywhere I go, oh, oh, I ain't changed it up, oh, oh. Always on my road, I'm still New York. You're the only, oh, oh, that I'll ever know, oh, oh. My concrete walls, I'm still New York.
Yeah, BK born and raised, I was God sent. To hit them courts out in Prospect, take them long walks on my time spent. Just a kid with that empire state of mindset. Kick flipping off a blind deck, dipping from the New York City's finest. Yeah, said I've been up on my New York shit. Walking down the block with my New York bitch. I can never leave my city, ain't nothing like it. Even if I do though, I can never hide it. Top down on the west side when I'm driving. East side be the only side that I'm riding. And I'm still New York.
I'm still New York.
I'm still New York.
ain't changed at all, no. I ain't changed at all. I'm still young.